Welcome to the Chrisman Commentary Daily Mortgage News Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Chrisman. Topics on today's episode include homes and wealth building, my interview with MCT's Phil Rizzori on the current state of the capital markets and the holy grail for pricing technology, and what would a 5% 10-year do to volume? Thanks to today's podcast sponsor, PHH Mortgage. For over 35 years, PHH Mortgage has provided industry-leading mortgage services. They're one of the largest servicers of residential mortgages in the United States and offer a variety of solutions for the entire mortgage lifecycle. If you are looking for a correspondent lending partner or an experienced award-winning sub-servicer who can manage your forward and reverse, residential and commercial, and performing and non-performing loans, look no further than PHH. Learn more at business.phhmortgage.com. Just because you own a home doesn't mean you're wealthy. In fact, some homeowners live in poverty. A LendingTree analysis shows that more than 3 million families who live in owner-occupied homes in the U.S. earn incomes below the poverty threshold for their family. 7.4 million families across the nation earn incomes below their poverty threshold. Nearly 9% of the nation living in poverty. Of the families in poverty, 41% live in owner-occupied housing units, and 59% live in renter-occupied housing units. Montana, Vermont, and Idaho have the largest share of impoverished families living in owner-occupied homes, 55% on average. New York, Connecticut, and New Jersey have the smallest share of impoverished families living in owner-occupied homes at 29% on average. For today's interview, I want to welcome back to the show MCT's Phil Rizzori to talk about the current state of the capital markets and the holy grail for pricing technology. As COO of MCT, his areas of expertise include complex financial modeling, computational dynamics, and linear programming for operational optimization. He's a recognized thought leader in capital markets operations within the mortgage banking community. We recorded the interview on Wednesday, so when he references today's inflation report, he's talking about the consumer price index that had just been released.
You know, this has really been a 1-2 punch Friday and today, you know, with the jobs number blowing out on Friday and then today's inflation numbers. We've had a good run really ever since, if you think back to call it Halloween of last year, it was looking pretty bad, right? We were above 5% on the 10-year, nobody would have thought that we were, you know, we'd head back in the right direction back then, and we did. You know, got down into all the way into the 5.5 coupon. You know, you had asked about coupons. And we've been kind of bounced back in January into the 6, and that's really where we've been. But today, we're down under par now on the 6s. And so I think that's going to really take us into the 6.5, you know. So this, you know, it's anybody's guess, but I was looking at the CME Group's, Fed Watch tool, you know, and if you look at just last week, you know, we had a, let's see, last week, the probability of a cut in June was 56%. Now it's 16.
16. Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So,
I should say good for who, because it's like, it's good for the U.S. economy that the job market's so robust. It's not necessarily good for those people looking for relief on interest rates. You know, inflation's proven sticky. The Fed's probably not going to cut. So on one hand, it's like, this is great. You know, the economy's resilient. But on the other hand, it's like, shoot, man, bonds just hit their highs of 2024 in terms of yields.
Well, I mean, no, 100%. I mean, you can see it just in the market today. You know, it's pulling back. The stock market's pulling back just because of that, that inflation print. And, you know, we're up. I mean, it's a big move. So that's why I was saying today is a You know, apropos time to talk a little bit about what we're seeing. It's definitely going to change things. You know, we're up 19 basis points in yield now on the 10-year today. So, you know, I think the hope is we get some probably, you know, this April jobs number coming first week of May. Yeah, I think we got to hope for that to cool off a little bit.
Why are we still seeing such an inverted yield curve? Because normally that portends a recession, but it's like, hey, this soft landing is clearly in focus. At what point, what's it going to take for the yield curve to return to positive convexity?
You know, one thing, either the short end comes down or the long end goes up. And I think given the industry that we're all in, you know, we would hope that that it would be the short end going down, which is really what that's what the bond market thinks, obviously, is you know, going to happen, that you know, you're still going to get these cuts. And even with today, I'm just using this again, this Fed tool here, I just looking at it, I mean, they're looking at, you know, by the time you get out to November, the current probabilities, there's only a 25% chance right now the market thinks that we'll still be where we are. So, you know, 75% chance that there will have been some cut by November. You know, that's 42% chance thinks it's only a 25 basis point cut. But then there, you know, could be 25% chance that there's going to be 50 by that time. So I think that even with today, the market still feels that, you know, a target rate of, you know, 5.25 to 5.50 is too high.
I'm so happy that the market is finally aligning itself with the Fed. You know, at the start of the year, it was 6 rate cuts this year. Oh, and the others chatter, oh, it's an election year, and so there's going to be political pressure to bring down rates. The market is finally, after the past year and a half of overexuberance, coming to grips with the Fed is as hawkish as it is saying it is, which is good. I mean, will that ultimately put downward pressure on spreads? Could that push mortgage rates down, or what would it take for spreads to come back more in historical ranges?
You know, we have that upward pressure on spread treasuries just by the fact that the, you know, Fed allowing runoff, right? And by what they said, that they don't, you know, they don't want to own mortgage-backed securities, we would probably expect that to continue. And so that's what, you know, you and I've talked about that a lot, Robbie, that we're looking at, you know, at the current rate, we're looking at another 9 or so years of that. Obviously, that would, we think it wouldn't take that long. But that's going to always keep pressure. But to your point, you know, when you lower prepay speeds with rising rates, you would get a little bit better spread to treasuries on some of those coupons, for sure.
Let's talk prepays, then I want to get into client chatter. It seems like we're kind of at turnover speeds. You know, CPR is incredibly low, right? And I think it's like the second lowest that we've seen in the past 40 years, something like that. What does the most recent prepayment speed readings tell you about what's going on, and what can we hope for the future?
Obviously, the you know, everybody's talked now for 2 years about the lock-in effect. We know that exists, you know, so it's going to be hard. Nobody, I don't think, sees a rally coming that would make it, you know, financially reasonable to do a rate term refi, right? But there is, I think there's hope from a lot of, you know, a lot of people out there with the level of equity that's in the house, you know, in residential housing. And you combine that with credit cards. And, you know, eventually, I think, you know, there are a lot of people, including me, that think eventually the credit card party will end. And you've got to, once you hit that wall, you know, you will see you know, financially beneficial refis, even at cash out refis at 7%, you know.
So I'm gonna veer left here, and then we'll get back on course. You started MCT almost 20 years ago, or you joined MCT almost 20 years ago. Are you having more fun at this point in your career building new technology for MCT? Was it more fun when you first start? I know it was obviously a tough time in 2008 and around then, but where's your head in terms of enjoyment and what you're doing?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I definitely having a lot of fun now. You know, it's really like, again, like you and I have talked about over the years, there's still a lot of a lot of room for improvement in technology, in execution. Both on the hedge side, on the loan sale side, on how the hedge is monitored and executed, throughout the process of the pipeline hedge process. So yeah, no, it's still exciting. It was, like you said, it was a lot different back then. Pre 07, all of us hedge advisors were, it was tough because you had, remember the majority of product or was headed in 2005, the majority of product was not agency and was, the hedge really was not, very safe, frankly, because of all of these credit issues that you had with different products. So I think it's become, you know, the fact that all of that has gone away has made it a much more stable and has brought a level of sanity to all of us hedge advisors.
What is the chatter amongst clients when you speak with your clients? What's topics are coming up?
Well, I think, you know, going back to today being a great day versus yesterday to talk about this, the chatter on our in our clients over the past few months, what we've seen is kind of because of the notwithstanding today, because of the stability that the relative stability that we've had given, you know, compared to the start of 2022 on, because of that relative stability, we've seen a little bit of a drop in your forwards, your builder buy downs. We were seeing, you know, we're seeing obviously a heck of a lot of demand for that in Q3 into Q4. We were really excited in conjunction with Agile Trading Technologies. We released a competitive fourth month execution, which that allows for those of your listeners that trade. There is the electronic screens have three tradable months, which make them very liquid and very very efficient to trade. So that's your current, your mid, your back month, your front, mid, and back month. And the issue that occurs there is if you're trying to match your expiration date on a 90-day lock, there's really only one time of the month that you can get close to that is when you have a brand new month that you've rolled over. And so being able to trade the fourth month, which a lot of dealers have done over the years, just kind of on a one-off basis, being able to trade that competitively was a real real good innovation. It was really exciting to bring. The reason I bring that up is that there was a lot of excitement. We brought it to market in Q4. As we really kind of, as rates were dropping into end of Q4 in December, and then we had this stabilization, and we saw a lot less demand than we expected for it because there was this stabilization in the six coupon. Now I think we're going to, you look at today, we've had this shoot up in rates, moving back into the 6.5 coupon. I think you're going to see, to the question about chatter of the client base, I think the question will be getting more long-term protection for the borrower, the borrowers. you know, once borrowers and lenders see rates come down and see rates stabilize, there's less desire to pay the price for a long-term lock. You see the market turn around like it's beginning to do today, that argument changes a little bit.
Let's stay on the subject of innovation, and that 4-month look ahead is pretty neat. That's cool. I'm not sure what you can tease us with here in terms of MCT technologies, but I'll ask kind of more generally, how do you see the capital market space continuing to evolve? Obviously, there's always going to be more granularity, more transparency, but what sort of technology advancements do you think we could see going forward?
It's a great question. I think that, myself, MCT, and a lot of people in the capital market space have kind of been broken records about this, but I do think that, you know, the efficiency, that transparency that you just talked about, at the end of the day, the holy grail is to get all of these payups that exist, in the back end that right now are still, to a certain extent, windfall profits for the large securitizer or the larger lender, to get those further and further to the front end, right? To where lenders can efficiently and safely pass those payups to the borrower. And obviously, you know, big innovation occurred when the agencies on their cash windows, whatever that was, 6 or 7 years ago, started pushing through the spec payups, which allowed the lenders to have price transparency for those specs, and start to put that in their rate sheets. And then on some of the stuff, like you've recently seen, like last year, we saw the AMI LPA waiver, right? If you start to get that level of technology to where those LPA waivers, some of those, you know, you're hearing the agencies talk about mission indexes, right? The agencies are smart enough to know that lenders and capital markets participants are not going to be super interested in the mission index until they start to price for it. And so we would expect eventually some sort of either a mix requirement or a pricing component to follow the mission index. But again, that all of these payups, as we all know, really don't help the borrower unless we can get them down to the borrower. So I think there is a lot of hope there, because again, to credit the agencies, they have done a lot with getting those APIs, getting the that granularity of pricing, and then now it's really up to us on the capital markets advisor side to help the lender safely pass those specs through, because you can't really hedge those specs. They operate a little bit differently. They have higher duration than that TBA. So it's our job to help the lenders potentially hold back some of that spec on their front end rate sheet. We're releasing what we call our base rate generation, our base rate generator, which allows our clients to generate their pricing and then feed that into their product and pricing engine, whoever they use. But what it allows them to do is to match that back end execution to what they're pushing on the front end. And also hold back a percentage if they're doing specific spec products, hold back a percentage of that large pay up that might exist on some of those specs, which we would definitely recommend on some of the longer term locks, because you're taking a lot of risk there.
Let's close with this. My dad always said, whether you're selling tape measures or mortgages, product, price, service, pick two. How do you feel like one capital markets hedge advisory differentiates itself from the competition? And I was going to say MCT has so many different offerings. I'm trying to figure out how to how to frame, maybe MCT's advantage is that it has these various offerings all under one roof.
It's a good question. Robbie, over the years, MCT started 20 years ago, just really only managing, our customers' pipelines, fully managing them. And then, a little over 10 years ago, we started with our software MCT Live, allowing customers to take that competency in house. And really the expectation was, over the next 5 or so years, that the vast majority of lenders would want to take 100% of it in-house and use our software as a subscription. And much to my surprise, really, a lot of lenders have wanted to keep a component of that with their hedge advisor. And so when you ask the question about product or service, the product's important, but there's no question. There's a continuing service level, even with your most sophisticated lenders, because who have very sophisticated capital markets departments. They, it's definitely a moving market and a lot of different variables, and they always want somebody to, like you and I do over the years, bounce ideas off, bounce questions off. So I think there's always going to be a service component that's going to be important.
It's been a rough week for those hoping for relief from higher rates. After March consumer prices caused a CPI-inspired sell-off on Wednesday, it was much the same story again yesterday as investors continue to walk back the timing of Fed rate cuts. Inflation at the wholesale level rose 0.2% in March and 2.1% year-over-year, according to the producer price index. Even with the smaller-than-expected month-over-month increases, the headline PPI rate accelerated from 1.6% in February, while core PPI accelerated to 2.4% from 2.1%. Bond traders are bracing for a potential rise in 10-year Treasury yields beyond 5%, as the scenario of no rate cuts by the Fed this year looks increasingly possible. Pricing in Fed funds futures now implies less than a 1 in 5 chance that the Fed will cut rates by a quarter point in June. Prior to Wednesday's CPI report, pricing implied more than a 50% chance of a June rate cut. Richmond Fed President Barkin said yesterday that recent inflation figures raise questions and that he's reluctant to declare victory over inflation. New York Fed President Williams said that he expects inflation to move closer to the 2.0% target in 2025, but that there's no need to ease in the very near term. March import and export prices kicked off today's calendar. Expectations were for both to increase 0.7% versus 0.3% and 0.8% previously, but are totally overshadowed by the CPI and PPI data this week. Later today brings preliminary April Michigan sentiment, which includes forward-looking inflation expectations, and remarks from multiple Fed speakers. Bank earnings also kick off with JP Morgan, Citigroup, and Wells Fargo reporting before the open, along with BlackRock and State Street. Wall Street is expecting a subdued earnings season as global growth picks up. A solid domestic economy is expected to fuel a rise in profit growth for S&P 500 companies, and strong margins from big tech will be a key driver. We begin the day with agency MBS prices better than Thursday by about an eighth, the 10-year yielding 4.52 after closing yesterday at 4.58%, and the 2-year yielding 4.91. Let's wrap up with a joke and some housekeeping. A gambler gets a notice from the IRS that he's being audited. So he calls his tax attorney and they go over to see the IRS agent. As they're waiting in the office, the agent looks over his paperwork and says, "The reason for your audit is that you live such a lavish lifestyle, yet there's not much income to justify it. Can you tell me what you do for a living?" The gambler says, "I'm a professional gambler." "A gambler?" asks the agent. "Yes, I make money from bets. Let me demonstrate. I bet you $1,000 that I can bite my eye." "You have a bet." The agent has a smug smile on his face, but it vanishes when the gambler takes out his glass eye and bites it. The agent did not see that coming, but he did agree to $1,000 in front of the gambler's attorney. "Fine, that wasn't fair," says the gambler. "I'll give you a chance to win your money back by betting another $1,000 that I can bite my other eye." The agent looks through the guy's paperwork and sees that he's not legally blind, so he takes the bet. To his horror, the gambler takes out his dentures and bites his other eye. Now he's on the hook for $2,000. You know what, says the gambler. Double or nothing. I'll stand on the edge of your desk, close my eyes, piddle into the garbage can on the other side of the room without spilling a drop. What do you say? Perplexed but desperate, the agent agrees. The gambler stands on the desk, unzips his pants, closes his eyes, then pisses all over the agent's desk. Yes, exclaims the agent, glad he won't owe the gambler anything. Damn it, yells the attorney. What's the matter, asks the agent. Well, he bet me $20,000 that he'd come into your office today, piddle all over your desk, and you'd be happy about it. Thank you again to today's podcast sponsor, PHH Mortgage. Their unwavering dedication to customer service and best-in-class operating performance has made them one of the most highly decorated servicers in the U.S. over the past 3 years, with awards from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, as well as a HUD Tier 1 rated servicer. Reach out to them today to learn how their innovative servicing and lending solutions can benefit you. If you have any questions about the podcast or sponsoring opportunities, send me an email at robbie@robchrisman.com. Visit robchrisman.com for more information on our industry partners, access to archived commentaries, and how to subscribe to the daily mortgage news and commentary. To listen to or download past episodes of this podcast, search Mortgage News on any platform you get your podcast from.